something up with me.
And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. It's time now for What You Got Cooking, where we'll talk about recipes and food trends and traditions and good eats with our resident foodies, John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler. John Shields is the chef and author and owner of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha Wohlhandler is here as well. She and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering in the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Charm City. Great to see you both. Happy fall.
Happy fall, Tom.
A great time of the year, Tom.
So we're going to talk about root vegetables. We'll start with that. It's at the farmer's market just last Sunday. You know, Sasha, you and I tend to favor the one under the expressway, and I know, John, you're the king of Waverly Farmer's Market.
That's my spot.
You're there all the time, so we've got at least those two covered. But, you know, there are so many vegetables that a lot of people got scared off of as children, things like beets and Brussels sprouts and parsnips and turnips and rutabagas and that kind of stuff. It's interesting how, you know, you grow up thinking that a beet is something that, you know, gets boiled and you know, slopped on the plate and your mother won't let you leave the table until you eat it. But there are better ways of doing these things, aren't there? You know? So let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, it's interesting that, you know, I think the world went through its sauté phase, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Now we're into our roasting phase.
Yes.
But I'd like to say, if we're going to roast, and we are going to roast here, everybody better first clean out the oven.
So what? Now, why is that important? See, I'm right off the mark here, I'm completely guilty of. I do that once a year, whether I need to or not.
Well, I think because everybody, first of all, we've all been grilling this summer, and no one wanted to turn their ovens on, and everyone throws everything in the oven. I've got pots and pans in there that lots of times I've forgotten are in there. And we just, also, we're going to raise the oven high so we can get these beets and other vegetables cooking well. But so you want the oven up to 400, 425, 450. And believe me, if that oven is messy, it will be messy.
You're going to find out. Yeah. That first roast of the season, if you had left anything in there the past year, you'll find out real quick.
It'll come back to haunt you.
And you'll be setting off the fire alarms, and you better have some sandwiches ready for the fire department that'll come. But let's not scare you.
No.
As Sonny and Cher would say, let the beat go on. So
go.
Let's talk beets.
So, well, you know, with roasting in general, I remember when I first started doing this a few years ago, it seemed that I did it at like 350 for a while. I mean, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. But now I guess the common wisdom, John, what do you think? The common wisdom is to do it a little higher temperature for less time.
Indeed. That's what you'll find. It's generally anywhere from 450. Some people go 500, depending on the vegetable, how thick it is. And part of the philosophy is by going at a high heat, you bring out the sugar in the vegetable.
Okay. And what John just said, the sugar is what leads to that great caramelization, which is what you are looking for. And so I want you to test, this is the beets.
Yeah.
Let's talk beets first, John.
Yep, that's great. And Sasha, you've been nice enough to bring in this whole tray, and we'll have a picture of it on the website.
Unbelievable.
You know, so here's a beet.
And be careful.
And
those beets will get messy. And as you can see, here's a napkin, Tom.
Okay.
And what to do the beets, it's so simple, folks. And I know lots of you have walked by those beets in the farmer's market. And really important to stop. First of all, there's the red beets, which are very messy but beautiful. Did you not get an aroma as you opened that, Tom?
Fantastic.
Now, folks, what
that's
I did
great.
Is I had a beet. I washed it, and then I dried it, and then I put some oil on it, and then I wrapped it all in tin foil. And the big hard part to cook this, I opened the oven door and I threw it in. Right, John?
It's rough.
Really rough. It's tough to do. You can all do it, folks. When you see those beets tomorrow, remember, the beet goes on from Sonny and Cher. When you see those beets, grab them. Cut off the beet greens, and John's going to tell you what to do with those in a minute. I know he's got a great idea for those. Don't waste anything. Wash them. Throw them in tin foil. Put them in the oven. They will be a whole lot different than those beets you remember.
So you're putting a whole beet in, unpeeled. In the oven. Okay, so I'm in the habit of scraping them and cutting them up and putting beet pieces in on a pan, you know, flat in a pan, and roasting them. Is there a downside to doing that, John?
No, well, it works both ways. The upside of doing it in pieces is that you're going to get more crispy pieces because you have more surface.
And that's that caramelization you were talking about.
But you know, the way that I often do, just as Sasha says, is I'll just take the whole thing, whether it's a beet, a parsnip, or whatever, and roast it whole. And you don't have to do the peeling or anything until it's and after it's roasted for an hour, the peel just comes off so easily. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's no muss, no fuss.
So you would roast them for as long as an hour at 400 or 450? Boy, that seems like a long time to me.
What you want to do is, if a fork goes through it or a knife goes through it, or if you have those skewers, I mean, check it at 45 minutes. It depends on what size your beet is, as John said earlier. But just put a skewer through it, and you'll see whether it's tender or not. And you can do it your way. Or you can do it the way John and I talked about. What's nice with the beets is then the peel just
comes... It just sort of drops off.
Right. Well, it with a little aid, but it comes off. And folks, so easy. So now, did you get a great aroma from that?
Yeah, the aroma is incredible. It's
gorgeous. The color is gorgeous. And then over here, I also have some gorgeous, gorgeous golden beets. You'll see those in the farmer's market, folks, as well. And if you buy the two bunches together and you roast them off and then peel them and slice them, you have two incredibly beautiful colors to make a fabulous plate with.
Yeah.
And so,
do you think that there's much of a difference in taste between the orange beets and the red beets?
Actually, I find the orange beets to be sweet. In general, I get a lot of sweetness out of there.
I'm chomping on one as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different variety of beet, mm-hmm. and there are some nuanced flavors. And as Sasha said, by getting, you know, the beautiful golden beet and a red beet and putting it on your plate, whether it's for an appetizer or if a component to a salad, mm-hmm. you know, part of the food is the visual. And as we approach it, and the more colors you see, you just say, oh, my God, that's going to taste so good. And it generally does.
Yes,
it does.
Right. And that's really important, isn't it? When it looks beautiful, you're already talked yourself into that it's going to taste good.
Yeah.
That's great.
We're talking to is the cook out there who doesn't cook at all. We're just saying, you roast these, as we just said. It's a 1-2 process. Take them out. Slice them. Put red beet, orange beet, red beet. Toss up some greens next to it. What would you put with that, John? I think feta or blue cheese would be divine.
Well, with the beet greens, I do them a couple of different ways.
With the beet greens now. So we're talking about the stuff that we chop off the top.
Well, that you'd have to.
But you're talking about the actual beets. Serve it with cheese, maybe some pine nuts or something.
If I was making just a salad with your salad greens.
Absolutely.
Some pine nuts, some candied walnuts, some regular toasted almonds would be fabulous. Some hazelnuts, all of it. Any nut you want. Choose the nut of your desire. Put it with some great crumbled blue cheese, crumbled goat cheese. That will be delicious. Put it on, and you can look like the glamorous, wonderful chef you didn't think you were. Pull that out, a glass of wine, and you're in heaven.
Yeah. You could also make, for something like that, you could make a little vinaigrette that maybe you use orange or some orange zest in it.
Yeah.
And just drizzle a little bit of that on with the beets, and oh my gosh, it's so nice.
I also think... since you just brought up the oranges, wouldn't some sliced oranges, even some, what do you think about grapefruit with beets?
Oh, would be lovely.
And then
any of that sort of citrus.
Pears.
Citrus is
and
nice.
And even pears, I think, would be wonderful with a beet.
Yeah.
So
I've also roasted them. I've roasted them with horseradish and thyme.
Ooh.
And that works. It works really nicely. So when I finished roasting them, I take them out, I just toss it in a little, it's already got olive oil on it and salt and pepper when I roast them. And then when they're done, as you say, they get kind of crispy and, you know, caramely. And then I toss some horseradish, and thyme seems to be a good spice. Are any other spice ideas that you have?
That sounds delicious.
We love that,
it's pretty
Tom.
Good. Yeah.
I love that.
I found it in the Washington Post for like a Valentine's Day romantic dinner thing. And I said, well, I'm in need of one of those. This was, you know, 15 years ago. And we're still married. Our 30th wedding anniversary is coming right up.
So Pull out that recipe again. That's working for you.
So any other herbs that come to mind that go well with the roasted beets? What do you think?
I think think some thyme always works wonderfully with it. Rosemary would work really well. What else would you put it?
I mean, I think I would say that they would be two of my favorites to go to. Mm-hmm.
What were you going to talk about before with the beet greens?
Well, you were saying, you know, if you go to the farmer's market and you get the bunches that have the beautiful greens on, that's not necessary to throw them out.
Exactly.
You can make. You could if they're small and tender, you could actually put that into a salad mix. You could mm-hmm. add those to the salad.
So it's not too sour. It's not too tangy.
That's why I mix it. That's mm-hmm. why I would mix it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't use it 100% for
just
it.
Just throw
it
them in there.
It would be an addition. But otherwise, I like doing it just like I like pretty much any kind of green. If it's a little tougher, you can blanch it very quickly in some boiling water, then refresh it with cold water, and then I like to saute it in a little olive oil, garlic, a squeeze of lemon, and just about anything you...
That's kind of heaven.
It transforms it, and it is delicious.
Yeah. And that's sort of like you could cook kale that way, too, right?
Absolutely.
So any of those sort of greeny things. I also keep it... I don't eat the beet greens myself. I found them a little bitter. Maybe I'm just not doing it right, mm-hmm. but I keep them for vegetable broth.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great.
And sometimes it makes
right
the vegetable
in.
Broth red too, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that is cool.
I just want to point out, we were talking before about how easy it is to peel this. I left this one golden beet whole, and look how the skin
just
comes
just
right
off
up. I'm pulling it off with my fingertips, folks.
Right. Yeah.
And I kind of left when you get those beet greens. I kind of left an inch or two of the stem there. I read somewhere that if you leave it in there, it makes them extra juicy. And these golden beets are really juicy. Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about, you know, roasting them whole, this really applies to any of the vegetables that are in the market right now. I mean, you can do this with a rutabaga, a turnip, a parsnip, a carrot, you know, any of that stuff, and then peel them after you roast them. Yeah, that's good. And 450 or 400 or 450 for as long as an hour. That's really interesting
to
me. That seems like a long time.
For a whole beet. We're mm-hmm. talking
for the
a whole beet.
Not, yeah.
The mm-hmm. whole beet.
And obviously it would be less for a bunch of skinny carrots.
Oh, yeah.
Less for,
oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Right.
Let's talk about carrots because, you know, carrots aren't just orange anymore. I mean,
we've got some
gone are the days of, you know, Bugs Bunny and his orange carrot. What's your take on these different colored carrots that I see at the farmer's market? There's purple ones and there's sort of, you know, beige ones. Which kind of look like parsnips, but, you know.
Yeah. They're all colors. And again, it goes back like with the beets. It's just... Having all those vibrant colors together are wonderful. They're all, again, a little bit of different varieties. You'll get some different variations on taste. Some might be a little sweeter. Some have a more earthy flavor. Recently I've been getting several colors, and then I cut them up, peel them, cut them up a little bit, and dice them. And then I put them into some hot water, just quick. I count to 10, take them back in into ice water, and then I make like a little Moroccan carrot salad out of it. So I take some lemon juice and a little bit of olive oil, some cinnamon, honey, mix that all up, and marinate it with the carrots. Just let them sit for about 30 minutes before you're ready to serve them, and you can put some fresh basil in there, or you even better, mint. A bunch of fresh mint in there. And it just makes a nice accompaniment to anything that you're having.
And you blanch them a little bit so that they're not quite raw. Right. They're just a little sub-raw.
Yeah, you can't even quite tell that they've been cooked, mm-hmm. but they have. Right. And it just, I would say, it takes the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, Sash, before we take a break here, what are some of the other spice groups that you tend to think of with carrots?
I'm so glad that John brought up spices because I think it's really important to know that all these vegetables, while the simplistic thing is to say, and simplicity works for all of us, you can all roast a vegetable, three things, olive oil, salt, and pepper. But then, as John was so beautifully saying with the Moroccan spices, you can branch out. I mean, ginger goes beautifully on a carrot. Mm-hmm. Curry goes wonderfully on a carrot. A little cinnamon, a little cardamom, a little hot spice. Mound those all together. You just have a wonderful abundance of flavor. And, of course, we have some purple carrots there and some red. And Orange, rather, and salt and pepper and EVOO, 10, 15 minutes.
Extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah, right mm-hmm. in your oven at 425 or so. I have single-handedly felt that I've added to the consumption of carrots at Sasha's. At lunchtime, we have roasted carrots, and people just go crazy if we've run out of them.
Yeah,
I want my roasted carrots.
All right, Sasha Wollhandler and John Shields are here. John's a chef, a former television host, and an author. Along with John Gilligan, he's the proprietor of Gertrude's Restaurant, located at the BMA, the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha and her husband, Steve Susser, own Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. It's What You Got Cooking on Midday. We'll have more with our favorite foodies after a quick break. Join the conversation. Let us know how you cook this stuff. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. Before we take our break, our thoughts go out to the family of our colleague and friend Art Buest. Art died this week after a long illness, which followed a stroke that Art suffered nearly 4 years ago. So Art hasn't been on the air here at WYPR for a long time, but he has been in our hearts. He was a good and gentle guy. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday, a conversation about the epidemic of sexual assaults in the United States. Whether or not it's being talked about in locker rooms, it's most certainly being committed at schools and on mass transit, in offices and in homes around the country. It's not just Trump. It's a lot of men and a lot of women have felt that they've needed to remain silent about it for a lot of years. So we're going to talk about what's come to be known as rape culture and how to change that culture. That's Midday Monday. And if you've just joined us today, Sasha Wollhandler of Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering is here along with John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA. It's What You Got Cooking on Midday. We're talking food, particularly all those great root veggies that are so abundant these days at the farmers markets around Maryland. Join the conversation. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know what you might be able to be convinced to like if you cook it the right way. 410-662-8780 is our number. midday@wypr.org is our email address. And @MiddayTomHall is the way you can get us on Twitter. Let's talk a little bit about cauliflower. When I was a little kid, cauliflower was one of those things that I was forced to eat. You know, my mom used to do it nicely by putting it in a cheese cream sauce but the point of that, of course, was to disguise the fact that it was cauliflower. But now, if you roast cauliflower, it's terrific. You roast it just the way we're talking about some of these other things. You know, put a little spices. By the way, when it comes to the spicing, the way I've been doing it recently, because I have a bunch of spices and herbs that I'm growing in the back of my house on my deck in little pots, right? So I love roasting these vegetables, going out, cutting off some basil, cutting off some oregano, cutting off some chives, cutting off some mint or some thyme, and then throwing it on the veggies and serving it. So I don't cook it with the spices. I put the spices on raw afterwards. Is that the way to do that?
You're in a good direction. I mean, that's when you're going to get the most flavor
from
the herbs. And some things, you know, need a long simmer and need some spice as they simmer. But most of the things that you're doing, or especially on the grill or quickly, the fresh on there is just the best.
So you don't have to cook it with, you don't put the basil on and then put it in the oven. But Sasha, let's talk about cauliflower. You've brought a cauliflower pizza. That's why. And again, we'll have a picture of all this beautiful stuff that Sasha's brought in here on our website, wypr.org/midday. So what's this cauliflower pizza?
Well, I've heard about it forever and ever. A couple of my chefs at Sasha's have talked about it. One of my assistants in particular made it one day. I didn't taste it. So when we were talking about doing cauliflower, we bought some roasted cauliflower, but I thought, let's do this cauliflower pizza. Folks, it is, I think, pretty good. Pull off a piece, Tom. You're making a cauliflower crust. And what you're doing
This would be completely gluten-free,
for
example.
Totally gluten-free. No, give John a piece over there. I want him to taste it.
That's fantastic.
And what it is,
that is really good.
And folks,
For chewing in your cars if you're driving around right now, but it's really good.
It's so simple to make. I'm telling you, it's like 20 minutes. Get your head of cauliflower. And for those of you that have never tackled a cauliflower, cut it in half. Cut out that big center stem. Pull out the florets or cut the florets. Take all those florets. Toss it in put it in your Robocoup or your Cuisinart. You will need that piece of equipment, folks, and whir it around so it becomes almost like little grains, like farina. And I've written this whole recipe down. Take it out, and you're going to throw it together with some mozzarella and some Parmesan is what I used. And then I didn't use fresh herbs. I put dried herbs. I put some garlic powder. I put some thyme. I put some oregano. I put some basil, tossed it all together with some egg. And then the important thing to remember is when you, after you've taken that cauliflower that's come into almost like a grain, you're going to steam it for about 5 or 8 minutes till it becomes soft. The important thing is when you take it out of the steamer, put it on a dish towel and roll it up and twist it so all that water comes out of it, and do that a couple of times because you want it as dry as possible. And then you're going to combine it with everything else and make a little square or round pizza and put it in the oven at 425.
Yeah.
You're baking it without the toppings, then take it out and you're going to put whatever toppings. I just put some pesto and some mozzarella on that.
Yeah, it's delicious.
That's a delicious.
It's a delicious.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thumbs up from me and Shields here. Let me tell you.
It is so great. Now taste that roasted cauliflower.
Yeah, of course, the roasted cauliflower I'm a big fan of. And John, you actually do cauliflower. We're going to talk a little bit about tailgating. You actually do a wonderful cauliflower recipe that's good for the football game.
Yeah. It's you're using, making like a buffalo cauliflower wings. And, you know, you're cutting up the cauliflower into little florets, sort of like Sasha did for this. And you're making a little batter you can make it out of milk, soy milk, almond milk, and flour. You put some garlic in there, some onion powder. And then you're basically dipping the florets into that mixture, putting it on a greased baking pan, and then you put it into the oven. And you bake it for about a half an hour until they just start to get tender. While you're doing that, in the meantime, while they're baking, you make a little buffalo sauce. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get some of the Frank's hot sauce and put a little bit of butter in there. Melt some butter in it. Or if you want to keep it vegan, you can use vegan butter. And then when the cauliflower is just about done, you start drizzling that sauce over top of it, put it back in the oven, and it starts to brown and caramelize.
Ooh, how delicious.
And, oh my God, it's so good. I mean, it's just like having a big thing of wings without the guilt.
I know.
that's perfect for
the nice
for
thing.
Grilling.
This is kind
perfect
of
perfect for the sports.
It is guiltless. Yeah. I mean, really, you're having pizza, but it's cauliflower.
Yeah, the cauliflower pizza while you're watching the game on TV, or the cauliflower wings while you're in the parking lot. Jefferson from Annapolis joins us on Midday. Jefferson, you got a soup recipe that you can share with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I do a root soup, and it's everything you've been talking about, but all chopped up and then throw it into a pot with some chicken stock, onions and garlic, and wow.
Yum.
Just let it cook until it's all mushy, and you can puree it or serve it that way. It's great for parties. It's really a hearty dish for this time of year.
Do you have particular vegetables that you always go to for that particular soup?
I love parsnips and turnips and yams. Just anything you find at the farmer's market.
Jefferson.
And beets. And beets. Oh, they're great.
Jefferson, what seasoning do you put in with that?
You hardly have to do anything. Just salt and pepper. That's all I do. It's just great. All of those wonderful flavors just come right through.
Yeah, delicious and nutritious, as they say. Oh, that's great, Jefferson. Well, thanks for the call. That's a terrific idea. We have an email. I want to change the subject to acorn squash. Lynn writes us and says, what can I do with acorn squash? Got one in her Hungry Harvest box, and she says she's at a loss. So
everything.
We love acorn squash, so we got a couple ideas for that. Sash, what do you think?
Everything with acorn squash. First of all, Lynn, did you say Lynn?
Lynn. She's
from
Baltimore.
Cut it right in half and put a little olive oil on it, a little salt and pepper. Put your oven up to 400, 425. Turn it over so the cut half is resting on your cookie sheet. Shove it in the oven for about 15, 20 minutes. Then take it out and you can make a little glaze of honey. You can just put honey on it. Or you can take some brown sugar and butter and roast it for another 15, 20 minutes until it's kind of soft. Alternatively, you can stuff that and feel really glamorous after you've kind of put it in for about 15 or 20 minutes and it's soft. You can also make a stuffing of sausage and saute up some sausage, saute up some bread, bread cubes, saute up some onions, put it all together and stuff it in the middle there with your favorite stuffing and put that for another 15, 20 minutes and bring that out at Thanksgiving or for a dinner party. It looks completely gorgeous. There are so many things. Acorn squash is delicious. I know you've got it.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. After you did that roast that you talked about that had, you know, maybe a little bit of honey or brown sugar in it, you could just eat that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm done.
Right. Or if you did a number of them, you could take that and turn that actually into a pie filling that would be absolutely beautiful. I like to take some different grains also and stuff them. It could be quinoa. You could use a rice. You could use farro. And then you can put some dried fruit in that if you like, a little bit of goat cheese, some herbs.
And that's a meal.
It's a meal.
That's a meal. It's like having a really hearty cup of soup almost with, you know, if it's, especially if it's got farro or barley. I mean, that's
yeah,
going to be really hearty.
Yeah.
And excuse me, acorn squash is one of those squashes where you want to cook it with the skin on.
I mean,
I've never peeled one and cooked it, right? You know,
no,
like butternut squash, you can peel them and chop them up.
Yeah, no, you always keep that.
Yeah.
We have one right there. And that one is, and you should do this tonight, Lynn, just cut it in half. Throw it in the oven, as I said, and then the last 15 minutes, put a, or 10 minutes even, put a little honey, brown sugar, butter. It will be divine.
Yeah, it's a great idea because, you know, I think people are sometimes intimidated by the winter squashes, like one of those.
Yeah.
They see them at the farmer's market. They think, I wouldn't know what to do with that. And so they don't want to pick them up. A great idea, if you're at the farmer's market and you don't know what to do with it, talk to the farmer.
Yeah, they'll tell you. Right.
Like Joan Norman at One Straw Farm, she's like a walking recipe encyclopedia. She can rattle off 10 recipes for anything that you point at. So talk to the farmers. You'll learn all kinds of things.
That's a good idea.
I just want to bring up one thing, Lynn. If you're inexperienced with acorn squash, just be careful when you're cutting it. We don't want to end up with a Freddy Krueger moment, even though Halloween is quite close by. You can end up certainly cutting yourself. So just be careful. They're a little, every squash is a little difficult to cut. So get yourself ready and just be careful.
410-662-8780 to join us here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. John Shields from Gertrude's. Sasha's from Sasha's 527 is here as well. And we are talking what you got cooking on Midday. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. If you want to send us a tweet, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. Let's talk about butternut squash. Different than acorn squash. This is another one that might be intimidating. I noticed that some of the grocery stores, not the farmers markets obviously, but the grocery stores are actually selling chopped up butternut squash pieces.
Yeah.
And you can really, I found that you can roast those with a little garlic and olive oil and rosemary and serve them as if it were potatoes.
You can.
I mean, it's like a substitute potato.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It works well as a starch, a side starch. You could do that saute. You could even put a little bit of Parmesan cheese when you're doing that. And it's a beautiful side.
We have some right over there that is just plainly roasted with salt and pepper. And again, as John said, you can top it with anything. I have some Parmesan right there. You could also, if we're not being vegetarian, put a little crumbled bacon.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Of course, crumbled bacon could almost go with
that
anything.
That goes with
you
most things.
With a whole lot of things.
Think?
You know?
Yeah.
Really, you know? How about some other herb profiles that go well with, I've tried them with, as I say, rosemary. I've used oregano. I've used even basil or mint on that. But there are a bunch of others that
Butternut squash kind of goes with everything.
It's it adapts very well.
Exactly.
It adapts very well to
ginger would be marvelous
ginger is,
with it.
Is,
curry would be wonderful with it.
Yeah.
Garlic, of course. I mean, sage, a wonderful herb with it. So
and it works great for soups, stews.
It makes a fantastic soup. I mean, folks, butternut squash, so easy. If you go into the supermarket, as you said, they have it cubed up there ready for you. Put it together, saute some onions in the bottom of a pot, put in your butternut squash, put in a little ginger, a little curry, and then put in your chicken stock or vegetable stock. Bring it all to a nice boil, let it simmer for a while, and then very carefully fill up half of your blender. Be careful because it's hot, so you only want to fill it halfway and blend away. And that is divine.
My daughter makes a really great butternut squash soup. you know, which has a lot of the same stuff
right.
that you're trying.
Yeah.
And she blends it up, and so it's a little thick, and it's, again, it's like a meal in itself.
And then you just top that. You can leave it naked as it is. However, topping it with a little bit of sour cream, a little lime sour cream in that, wouldn't that be divine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good stuff. We're going to go to the phones now. Steve in Moncton has an idea for using those Halloween pumpkins we got lying around. Steve, welcome to Midday. What you got cooking?
Hi, Sasha.
Oh, hi, Steve. I know that voice.
Yeah. I got this recipe from an English woman who sent it to me in Lewis last year, and you take a pumpkin, take the top off like you do for a jack-o'-lantern, take all the seeds out, and then you basically make a chicken stew and put it in the pumpkin, and you put the pumpkin in the oven, and you cook it about 350 for 45 minutes or an hour. And when you're finished, it sort of shrinks down a little, but you take the lid off. And then when you scoop out the stew, you scoop a big chunk of pumpkin meat with it. And it is absolutely delicious.
Yeah, that sounds good, doesn't it?
I think I want a bite of that right now.
So the pumpkin combines with the chicken stew? I mean, so you get the combo of flavors?
It doesn't really combine, but the flavors combine. But the meat is still, you know, in the side of the pumpkin. So when you scoop out, you just scoop a bit of the side of the pumpkin with it and put it on the plate. And then the pumpkin's real soft by then.
Mm-hmm. What a fun dinner
I
party
know, that's
idea.
What I was gonna, it sounds
I mean,
fun.
Really fun to get
Delicious.
Four or five people or six people around all scooping out of a pumpkin. That really sounds it's sort of.
The pumpkin is one of those foods that I got to be convinced about. I'm the guy at Thanksgiving that always passes on the pumpkin pie.
What?
I just haven't gotten into pumpkins. There's a few things that I am just not.
Remember, John, we
of.
Talked about food traumas, which we're going to another time.
Yep.
But that's weird.
One of my food traumas is pumpkins.
You know? Well, that butternut squash could be a beautiful pie.
Yeah.
And it, you know.
Right.
And I bet
idea.
You would love that one.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably
or,
would. It's
or the acorn squash.
Yeah.
Those squashes, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. That was great.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Steve. On 88.1, it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. John Shields and Sasha Wohlhandler, our resident foodies, are with us. You can join us at 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or drop us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. We're going to have more ideas for root vegetables. We're going to talk a little bit about grilling and those tailgate parties that we're throwing this time of year as soon as we come back. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back in a flash. And we're back here on What You Got Cooking Midday Friday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you are with us. John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant at the BMA is here, as well as Sasha Wohlhandler of Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering in Baltimore. You can be with us as well. Give us a buzz, 410-662-8780. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall, or if you want to drop me an email, you can find us at midday@wipr.org. I want to talk about tailgating in a second, and I know you guys have some great ideas about that, but let's first talk about the lowly Brussels sprout. I mean, when those things are thrown in water and boiled, which is the way my mom used to do it, because my dad liked it that way, but the entire house smelled like Brussels sprouts for like a week, you know, and it grossed us all out. But a roasted Brussels sprout, a very different animal, you know?
I think the Brussels sprout has come into its own. It's almost just a sexy vegetable now.
It is.
And from those of us who did grow up not even looking at a Brussels sprout, and some of you who are now wrinkling your noses, the Brussels sprout, this is the era of the Brussels sprout.
It is.
I mean, we have here, I brought two different kinds. We have some, and they're so easy, folks. Once again, this is 1, 2, 3 of you got them in your box of vegetables from what's that group you mentioned earlier, Tom?
The Hungry Harvest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great group.
Use your Brussels sprouts, or if you see them on the big stalk where they look so gorgeous these days, first use them as a centerpiece and then take them off the stalk and cut the little ends off the little stems there, and then take off the leaves, toss them in some olive oil, salt and pepper, whatever seasonings you want to add, but olive oil, salt and pepper, throw them in the oven, 10 minutes for these guys. That's all. Toss them around at 5 so they get a little char on them. 10, 12 minutes, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah.
That's about it. And they are scrumptious by themselves, or you can take a little balsamic vinegar and add a little honey to it, which and may reduce it a tiny bit, or just as itself, and drizzle that over. It's delicious.
Yeah. Did you even have Brussels sprouts on the menu at Gertrude's, say, 4 years ago? Did anybody ever buy them?
Well, it was about 4 years. Actually, it was about 10 years ago. We started because I, too, come from a family that basically they overcooked the Brussels sprouts. They always overcooked.
The
overcooked all the vegetables because they wanted to make sure you didn't die from the vegetable. it was a technique.
And here you are, still standing.
I'm still here.
Clearly, they were right.
But we had a chef who was from Croatia, Tomislav Niksic. And what he did, and it's an easy recipe to do, he took the Brussels sprouts and he just blanched them quickly. Took them out, cooled them a little bit. Then he took a saute pan with some butter and he started the butter melting and then getting it to be a brown butter. He put the Brussels sprouts that were cut in half or quartered into there and he started just cooking them slowly in it. Added then some sliced almonds, and right at the end, he put a touch of honey in and caramelized the whole thing. Well, I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
The word yum comes to mind.
I love Brussels sprouts. Now they're the new popcorn.
They are.
Because you roast them, you can put any kind of combination of things on it. You could put, you know, some cheeses on it. You could put Old Bay on it, you know, and pop it like that. But, Brussels sprouts?
Yeah. If you're comfortable with frying, taste this fried Brussels sprout.
So you fried these, right?
I fried those, and what I did is nothing to them except cut the stems off, took the outer leaves off, cut them in half, and threw them in a fryer. Now, you don't have a fryer at home, but you do have a Dutch oven that you can fill halfway up with some oil, bring it to about 400.
Yeah, that's good.
And aren't they delicious? And then salt and pepper on them.
And so much other stuff. I mean, I've done them with dried cranberries and pecans. Mm-hmm. You know,
you can dress them up.
Yeah, that's great. On Midday, Colin is joining us from Joppa. Colin, welcome to the show. Glad you could call.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks
doing
for
great.
Having me.
So you have an idea to combine a bunch of these root vegetables. What are you cooking these days?
Yep. So I'm a personal chef. I cook for an awesome family of four out in Moncton, Maryland. So I did a dish the other day where I went to the farm, got whatever the root vegetables they had available. I picked up a butternut squash, some tri-colored carrots, parsnips, cut all of them down. Butternut squash I broke down raw, as you said. So I peeled it, diced it, tossed all of those with a bunch of onions and oil and roasted them, added some garlic, some honey, some warm spices, so cinnamon, nutmeg. I blended some asparagus tips and put them on there. So I think those warm spices and the dry heat really does well with those root vegetables, really brings out the sweetness. So I would say for a first-time user, avoid boiling, steaming, stuff like that, sort of brings out the pumpkin flavor in those gourds and squashes. Like you said, with the Brussels sprouts, either a roasting or a frying does really well because it really cuts through that bitterness that those greens have.
Yeah.
I say the same thing with broccoli and cauliflower. Asparagus are about to be, I mean, they're not in season right now, but they are locally available. So I would say the same thing. I mean, deep frying, roasting. Another suggestion with the frying Brussels sprouts, make sure that you either half or quarter them straight down the middle before that because they will explode in the fryer.
Right.
So
yeah.
They definitely pop a lot.
Yeah, great. Well, Colin,
I love frying them.
Those are some great ideas, Colin. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Here's a question from Denise. She says she's heard that Brussels sprouts are sweeter after the first frost. Is that true? Do you know about that?
Well, any of the vegetables like that are generally thought to be much better after the first frost. For instance, cabbage. You're not supposed to use the heads of cabbage till after the first frost, and especially if you're making sauerkraut. So that would apply to Brussels sprouts as well, I would imagine.
Howard is on the line from Baltimore. He's got a recipe for Brussels sprouts. Howard, welcome to the show. How do you do them?
Hi. Thank you. Very good. This started off as an artichoke recipe. If you remember Justin Wilson cooking Cajun, I got this from him back in the 70s. And it was originally to take a whole bottle of red wine, dump it in a pot, then add a lot of garlic, olive oil, lemon, and a little salt and pepper. And then you just throw the artichokes in there and you cook them. And at the time I was a student and I couldn't stand the idea of wasting a whole bottle of wine. So I kept the juice from that and I just cooked everything for the next week in it. And I did Brussels sprouts in it and it worked great. It was really wonderful.
Oh, that's terrific, Howard. It sounds
delicious.
Did
you drink the wine later? It had to be very nutritious. Uh-huh. It's probably the most nutritious bottle of wine I've ever heard about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great, Howard. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. So, John, let's talk a little bit about tailgating.
Okay.
You know, folks bring their little grills and stuff and set them up in the parking lot. I mean, you know, I have a brother and sister-in-law who live in Texas, and he was for a long time the athletic trainer at Texas Christian University. And, of course, football down there in Texas is a religion, you know. So tailgating for the TCU games actually begins on Friday night. People drive their RVs and stuff into the parking lot, and they have a big party Friday night. They get up Saturday morning. They continue where they left off. The kickoff is sometime around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then they go back to the RVs after the game, and they're there until Lord knows when Sunday morning. It's a religion. You know, Ravens fans, perhaps not that quite that crazy. I don't think they started Friday night, but certainly Sunday mornings, they're there bright and early. What are some ideas you have about spicing up the tailgates?
Well, they do. I mean, you know, sometimes I think the games are just an excuse to have tailgating.
Right.
Because people are so into it. And everyone's known. And if you go on the Ravens parking lot, the usual people are there all the time. And people go from one place to another. One of our chefs, Eddie Knott, he's a tailgating fanatic. And so we were talking about it the other day, and one of his favorites is this beer can chicken. And so he takes a whole chicken and he brines it, you know, like a salt brine. He'll put some herbs and garlic and everything in it. And then when he's ready to actually cook at the event, because you can do that a day ahead of time. And so he'll take it, he dries the chicken off, and he actually, you take the chicken and you open a beer can and you put the chicken, the cavity side of the chicken open on top of the beer can so it's inverted up, and you put it into, he has a big grill, and he can regulate the temperature. So he does it, keeps the temperature at around 325 and cooks it for about 45 minutes.
So the can gets hot?
Yeah,
cooks the chicken from the inside?
It does. So the beer, you know, it moistens it as it cooks, and the flavor goes all through it. A friend of mine once had given me a recipe for a Coca-Cola chicken. Same thing.
Same took idea.
But Eddie
doesn't
said,
work with a plastic bottle of Coca-Cola.
Yeah. So Eddie says it's the bomb, and people absolutely love it all the time. And I like to do, if you want to do something simple and have lots of friends and everyone will come to you and like you, take a bushel.
How did you know that I was direly in need of just that?
Yeah. bushel of oysters. Take a bushel of oysters and shuck some oysters. People will start gathering around right at that point. And you have a nice hot grill. Bring your favorite barbecue sauce. Take a little tablespoon, put it on the shucked oyster, with maybe a little half-inch piece of bacon. Put it on a plate, or it can go right on the grill, shell side down. Close that thing, and in about 5 minutes, you're going to have some of the best little oysters, barbecued oysters you can imagine.
Oh, that's right. And you're headed to St. Mary's County to judge an oyster festival
today,
right?
The National Oyster Cook-Off at the National Oyster Festival happens this weekend down in St. Mary's. So I'm going to be up to my ears in oysters this weekend.
And, Sash, one of the things that folks don't often think about for tailgating is the great potential of the crock pot.
Well, it is crockpot heaven, and in the world of competitive tailgating, of which you mentioned so clearly, John, I mean, it's the world of chili can go from A to Z. A friend of mine was telling me, you've had some very fancy ideas with the wonderful oysters and, of course, the beer can chicken. I'm going to go to the other end, you know, the guy who's got the Bic lighter and is barbecuing his hot dog on the lighter because he's had too many beers to drink. But she had a bunch of all the bags of Fritos, and she had everybody open their own bag, and she had three or four or five different kinds of chili, and she said everyone filled their own little Frito bag with the chili, and she had cheeses and sour cream and onions, and everyone just sort of dipped in. So I say combine the two. Have John's fabulous oysters, which I am absolutely salivating for right now. Have the Fritos with the chili bomb, and enjoy yourselves. And let's put some of those roasted vegetables in there as well, and have a great day. Don't forget to kiss your farmer.
Kiss your farmer, of course. Charisse has called. We don't have, we can't talk to her, actually, but she says if you don't have time to put the veggies in the oven, you can put them in a toaster oven at a high heat, you know, depending on how much you, and that's a good idea. So in other words, if you don't have 45 minutes or something, you put them in a toaster oven, it might go a little faster. That's good. The thing that you're talking about, Sasha, reminds me of when my daughter was on a swim team when she was a little kid. They called them tacos in a bag, and they had like chili. They would open up a bag of, you know, Fritos or something and pour the chili over in the bag, and then give the kid the bag. And that's what the kids ate at the swim meet.
Well, guess what? I guess the adults still like it, and it worked very well at a tailgate, but I want to combine it with those oysters.
We're talking about Brussels sprouts. I want to talk a little bit about rutabagas and turnips. We have like 15 seconds left to talk about this, but these are some that we want to remind folks do work well when they're roasted and treated in the ways that we're talking about. Although rutabagas and turnips probably on the very bottom of the totem pole when it comes to people digging them in general.
It is a shame, isn't it? And they're so good. They're so good. My grandmother loved them, and she didn't roast them, you know. She just gave them to us, and she would mash them. And with butter,
as if they were mashed potatoes.
Yeah, they were delicious. Yeah.
They are delicious and mashed up with some butter and seasoning. And here we just had some roasted turnips, and they're a tiny bit bitter. I left everything fairly naked so we could get the pure flavor.
Yeah,
but
good.
They are still great.
Great stuff. All right, you guys. Well, it's always fun to see you. Thank you so much. Look forward to the next time. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
John Shields is a chef, a television host, and an author. His restaurant, Gertrude's, is located at the Baltimore Museum of Art. Sasha Wohlhandler and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 restaurant and catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. We'll have some of the recipes that we've talked about today and links to more information on the web. Come on over to wipr.org/midday. I hope you join us for Midday Monday when we'll talk about rape culture and what it will take to eliminate the scourge of sexual assaults that girls and women and some men are subjected to. Malik Washington is the Associate Director of Sexual Violence Prevention and Education at the University of Pennsylvania. He'll be here along with Rebecca Nagel of Force Upsetting Rape Culture. And we'll have other guests as well talking about that very important subject. That's coming up Midday Monday. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. The show is produced by Rob Sivak, Bridget Armstrong, and Kathleen Cahill. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Lunch for our guests today was provided by the Hellman Restaurant, located at 806 North Charles Street in Mount Vernon. Since 1989, the Hellman has offered Afghan cuisine, including vegetarian and meat dishes, with herbs and spices from Afghanistan, as well as Central and South Asia. They're open for dinner every night, online at Hellmond.com. Good luck to everybody hitting the road in the Baltimore Running Festival. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.